Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studio right here in the heart of Hudson County, folks. You know, it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct, and I am the professor, Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here this week on the latest edition of the award-winning Politically Direct, actually the two-time now award-winning Politically Direct. And, of course, I want to thank you all for listening from wherever and however you may be doing so throughout the Garden State, and certainly to all my good friends throughout the good old U.S. of A. Now, you can write to the show's inbox at any time, ladies and gentlemen. It's politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. If you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic coming up, I'd love to hear from you. Once again, the email is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at PoliticallyDirectNJ. And, of course, check out my own Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. I know a lot of you enjoy my Instagram stories, a little humor, politics, sports, pro wrestling, motivational memes, everything else under the sun. Guess what? It's always there on my Instagram, so definitely look it up whenever you can. And also hit me up on Twitter at Professor F. Uribe. And for all of you Facebook subscribers, please take a moment to go to the official page for Politically Direct on Facebook. And, of course, like it, share it on your walls, and tell your friends to do the same. And this week's edition of Politically Direct, as always, is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, don't forget, check out Insider NJ every single day, ladies and gentlemen, by going to their website, www.insidernj.com, for the best coverage of the political scene, entire state of New Jersey. Nobody does it better than Insider NJ. I'm proud to be a part of the Insider NJ family since January of 2018 when the podcast started. And without question, a very versatile and what I would argue probably the best columnist anywhere in the state of New Jersey, ladies and gentlemen. And again, it's what we bring you here every single day via Insider NJ. It certainly starts at the top with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, who oftentimes kind of annoys me with his, like, ultra-liberal viewpoints. But, I mean, you know, he's a good writer. I'll give Max that much. He's a very good writer. He's an exceptional journalist. But, I don't know, I just, you know, when it comes to economics and other things, I don't know, Max just isn't there. You know, sorry. I love you, Max. You know, you're a good guy. You know, great dad. But, I mean, you know, again, stick to journalism, you know, because talking about other things, you know, I think you maybe should not, you know, get, maybe, you know, not get your feet there in the water, as they say. But great journalist in his own right, Max Pizarro, of course. My fellow teammates, which include outstanding columnist Jay Lasseter, as well as Fred Snowflake, even Alan Steinberg, who is downright delusional, almost now on a daily basis, it seems, with the amount of articles he submits. But Alan's a good guy. You know, I've had him on the show here. Very good person. Very misguided politically. But, I mean, hey, you know, that's the great thing about the Insider NJ family. It's a very diverse group of people. And listen, I'm sure that when they listen to this podcast and look at my social media posts, I'm sure that they hate what I have to say. So it's all good. But in any event, folks, I couldn't be happier to be a part of the Insider NJ family, because it really is an amazing group of men and women working here to bring you, again, the best political coverage anywhere in the state of New Jersey. Again, nobody does it better than Insider NJ. Again, upper right-hand corner, you'll see the subscribe button. Click on it, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So when you wake up in the morning and you're watching, let's say, cable news, hopefully you're watching, let's say, Fox and Friends, and not losing brain cells by watching CNN, you know, New Day or MSNBC with Morning Joe, which is just a downright atrocious program. But I mean, there are some people that watch it and think it's reputable. But anyway, if, regardless of what you're watching, whether it's the cable news shows, or you're watching maybe the sports shows like I like to do, you know, I'm usually watching Fox Sports, and I like to watch Undisputed and then The Herd. Occasionally I'll switch over to ESPN, see what the idiots there at First Take, for example, Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman have to say, or the other clowns employed there. But listen, regardless of what I'm doing in terms of watching television, you know, I'm like all of you. I'm on my smartphone. I'm going through my email. I'm deleting stuff that I don't need to see or scrolling through my social media. But guess what? When you're on your phone or your Mac or your PC, your tablet, whatever, and you're going through your inbox, guess what? The morning intelligence briefing will be there waiting for you. And again, it's the best coverage of what's going on right now in New Jersey. 8 days to go until Judgment Day here, not just in the Garden State, but throughout the country, as this 2020 election cycle will thankfully be coming to an end. It's been exhausting, to say the very least. But like I said, when you wake up in the morning, everything you need is right there in the morning intelligence briefing, brought to you by Insider NJ. Again, folks, don't forget to like them on Facebook. And of course, follow them on Twitter. Don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views expressed here and every week on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, the staff, our sponsors, and our advertisers. So, again, we appreciate you tuning in here, folks, via Insider NJ on Blog Talk Radio. Certainly, we have a great guest coming up in just a moment, so you don't want to go anywhere. But again, folks, as a reminder, here on the show, October is a really important month. As you know, I'm a staunch advocate for breast cancer awareness, as I'll continue to raise money this month for breast cancer awareness for the American Cancer Society and the Making Strides Against Breast Cancer campaign. Certainly, I've been raising money online because of COVID-19. I've been unable to host my usual event that I do every fall. And I'm trying to make the most of it. But again, partnering with the Union City local PBA number 8 has worked wonders here, as I've been trying to raise money as much as I can for Making Strides Against Breast Cancer. And certainly it's a cause that's very near and dear to me. And certainly, you know, partnering with them and my incredible sponsors this year, I think, goes without saying about how important this cause is to me, and quite frankly, you know, why I've been so invested in it since 2008. You'll be happy to know I've raised $50,348 for the American Cancer Society, ladies and gentlemen. It's again, it's near and dear to me, having seen friends, colleagues, people I care about in general, affected by the menace of breast cancer. And all I can say is that I'm proud to raise money this month, and certainly, as I mentioned before, partnering with the Union City local PBA number 8, along with my great sponsors this year, which include MedChoice Advisors in Hudson County out of West New York via the supervision of Fred Donato, the 512 Bar and Lounge in Cliffside Park, New Jersey, the Chris Hill agency out of Elizabeth. Shout out to Chris Moltisanti, Paola Orozco, and Hillary Cermino for their participation and support here on the show. Metropolis Nights Magazine, the leading online source for your nightlife and hospitality destinations. Again, Metropolis Nights doing a great job and keep us all informed. The Mason Civic League, a very distinguished nonprofit organization out of Hoboken, New Jersey, under the supervision of James Barricato. In addition to the Doghouse in Manuet, New York, a great, great place to grab. Perhaps I would argue the best food anywhere, folks, the Doghouse in Manuet, New York, in addition to Cooper Place, a great local nightlife establishment in Weehawken, New Jersey, again, under the supervision of James Barricato. Carolina Carbello, attorney at law out of Ridgewood, New Jersey, a great local attorney, as well as Carmela Maggio with Madison Real Estates, supporting the cause this month, as well as Mueller Insurance in Hoboken, New Jersey, via Erica Mueller, in addition to Dr. Frank Bello and the Bello Chiropractic page out of North Bergen, New Jersey. Insider NJ, of course, via the Graham family, along with Pete Onelia, so appreciate them being a sponsor this month, along with Maria Giswaldi and her law practice in Guttenberg, New Jersey, Maria Giswaldi at Law. And, of course, the distinguished chairwoman of the Hudson County Democratic Organization, Amy DeGees, via the Hudson County Democratic Organization, being a sponsor here during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So I'm very proud to have them join me on board this month and raise as much money as we can. And folks, let's do our part to help defeat breast cancer once and for all. But another important, significant component, folks, of October is that it is also Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And we all know domestic violence continues to become and still is a very persistent problem, not just in New Jersey, but around the country. And it's a serious social problem here. And it's one that deserves enormous amount of attention. And we do scrutinize it here on the show. We certainly want to bring you the guests to talk about it and certainly to continue raising awareness, because we have a very important symposium, folks, coming up this week, the second annual Domestic Violence Awareness Symposium via Facebook live stream coming up on October the 28th from 6:30 p.m. until 8:30 p.m., a very distinguished panel with guests there talking that day about what's going on. And certainly on that panel, again, when you check out the Facebook post, you can check out at www.newmilfordborough.com. Again, for the link, when it comes to the second annual Domestic Violence Awareness Symposium. And one of the panelists that day is a good friend of mine, and she's just an amazing human being, someone who is all over the state raising awareness and someone who is a fixture in New Jersey politics and advocacy. She is the former assemblywoman out of the 8th Legislative District down in South Jersey. She is also a domestic violence survivor and awareness advocate. Joining me here this week on Political Direct, folks, is the very honorable Maria Rodriguez, right here on Politically Direct. Hi, Maria. Hello, Maria. Hello. I hope you're there. Maria. Hello. Maria, I hope you're there. Hello. Maria. Folks, again, we'll just maybe some technical difficulties here. Just bear with us. Hopefully Maria will join us in just a moment here. Folks, again, remember you're always checking out the great episodes of Politically Direct at the website www.insiderng.com/podcast. You'll see all the episodes of Politically Direct there on the website there. So hopefully we'll get Maria on in just a moment. Hopefully she's joining us. Maria, hello. Yes, hello, Maria. Okay. Not sure if Maria can hear me. Maria, you're on the air. Do you hear me? I don't know if you're muted. Maybe you pressed mute by mistake. Okay. Hopefully, Maria, if you can call back, that'd be great. I don't know what happened there, folks. But again, hey, folks, it's the internet. It's technology. Don't know what happened there, but, you know, we'll get Maria back on in just a moment. Okay, I think this is her again. Folks, joining us here, we'll try this again. Joining us here on the podcast this week is a former state assemblywoman out of the 8th Legislative District, and she is a domestic violence survivor and awareness advocate. The great Maria Rodriguez Gregg joins us here on Politically Direct. Maria, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's an honor. You know, as I mentioned before during the previous intro, I mean, I've gotten to know you off the air. You're just an outstanding person and really a very dedicated presence here in New Jersey for not just during your time in the legislature, but more so raising awareness. Because as I alluded to, October is an important month for me because I do so much advocacy for Breast Cancer Awareness Month, but October is also Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And coming up on Wednesday, yes, there is an extremely important symposium coming up, folks. And again, it's this Wednesday, October the 28th, from 6:30 p.m. until 8:30 p.m. via Facebook live stream. There's a very distinguished panel of guests there, led by State Senator Loretta Weinberg, the Senate Majority Leader, as well as others. But again, one of the panelists is my guest here today, Maria Rodriguez-Gregg. Maria, I'll give you the floor here. Again, you are a very animated and very dedicated advocate. You yourself are a domestic violence survivor. And I can only imagine this is what emboldens you to be as, you know, vocal as you have been for some time in raising awareness about the ongoing serious problem that is domestic violence. What can you share with us today about why you're so passionate about this?
Well, I'm extremely passionate because of experience. It's something that I experience. I understand the horrible aftermath and the just having gone through a violent situation, and abuse isn't always violent. Domestic violence comes in different forms, whether it's mental, emotional, financial abuse. But having had that experience and opening up about it, it made me aware of how prevalent it is and how much it's overlooked, as well as it made me aware of the loopholes in our laws, in our legal system, and in resources to help people get out of violent situations, to find resources to safety and to protection. So it's something that I've experienced, and through my experience in raising awareness, have encountered so many other stories and so many other situations. And I just really, really want to create long-term change when it comes to this issue, not just from a legal policy perspective, but also from a cultural perspective and how we look at people that are experiencing violence, its forms. I think we have many different, you know, generalization stereotypes of what we think, how it occurs. And I really want to bring awareness and education to, again, help people, but also to prevent. Really begin that change to prevent break that cycle of violence that we see in our society today and in interpersonal relationships.
You know, there's a lot to unpackage there, Maria, and you brought up, all your points are amazing. You brought up one that really stood out for me, and it's the one about sort of like the misconception that when we talk about domestic violence, it's not just about physical violence against someone. I mean, we've seen awful stories for as long as we can remember about documented physical abuse, but it's not always physical. As you mentioned, it could be psychological, it could be economic. And these are the dynamics that in many instances tend to go overlooked when it comes to discussing this problem openly, correct?
Absolutely. It's completely overlooked. And the effects of that kind of abuse, listen, the elephant in the room, you know, everybody knows about my very, very public and embarrassing situation. You know, it's out there during that time. And don't get me wrong, I don't talk about this to absolve any responsibility. I've taken full responsibility. But at that time, I was experiencing PTSD just in general. I wasn't sleeping. I was having nightmares. I was having severe anxiety, panic attacks. I was an emotional wreck, and I began to self-sabotage. I was going through a complete spiral downward, and there are so many people that experience that, and it happens in different forms. When I came out about my story, I met Seth Diener, who started the Lisa Diener Foundation for Domestic Violence, and Lisa Diener was his sister, and she was someone that experienced an abusive relationship, and it was mental, emotional, all forms of abuse, and she committed suicide. So I think that people don't realize that there really is a huge mental health component that doesn't just affect people and families. It also affects us economically. You know, when you're experiencing the mental health trauma, and we've seen this because people, when they think of PTSD or any trauma disorders, they immediately think of soldiers. But even then with soldiers, I mean, we've seen where they've experienced PTSD, they've experienced homelessness, the lack of the ability to be gainfully employed, because it truly does affect you tremendously. And so I wanted to bring awareness to those mental health issues to show that abuse takes all forms, and so that people can have more awareness to get help, to realize that this isn't a healthy situation and that there are ways to escape it, as well as while it happens mostly to women, abuse happens to men as well. Abusive situations happens on all sides. So I really want to create education and awareness of what domestic violence is, to kind of make people more aware in order to, again, get help.
Again, and your story is one that you, again, it's to be applauded because of your courage, Marie. I mean, you've been one that has not shied away from the public eye. You have been very willing to talk about this openly and not necessarily sort of die on the sword for, you know, excuse the pun, but to be a staunch advocate and to say, listen, this happened to me. I don't want this to happen to anybody else. And if I can do something to prevent it, if I can reach someone and get through to them, to him or her, and allow them to develop the strength and the willingness and the wherewithal to say, you know what, I'm going to get out of this scenario and relationship or this specific situation, then you know what, I'm doing my part to raise awareness. How fulfilling has it been for you, let's say, in recent years from all the advocacy work that you've done? I mean, I don't want you to share a name per se, but is there a story that stands out for you of someone you've helped recently that say, wow, like, this is what makes my advocacy every day so worth it?
You know, it's fulfilling doesn't always seem like the best word, but no, I was able to be, I'm really, really proud to be a board member with Forever Your Overwatch Foundation. What they do is they provide a very niche service of safety and protection. There's this very sensitive spot when somebody gets a restraining order or tries to escape a violent or abusive situation. And in that time, you know, and we've seen this in the news, somebody gets a restraining order, they are murdered. Many times it seems like just a piece of paper. And while it's a necessary piece of paper in order to establish that there's an issue legally, people don't feel safe. You know, I know from my experience, I went and got my temporary restraining order, then I got a final restraining order. But the actual assault, when I pursued the assault charges, which, you know, my assailant did plead guilty, I was in municipal court. I was in literally municipal traffic court for an assault situation where I'm sitting there with people with traffic tickets and he's right there in my eye view. And it is a completely intimidating experience. I questioned if I should pursue it. I was embarrassed that it would come out. I mean, it came all out anyway, not the way I wanted, but it came out anyway. But I was embarrassed and I was ashamed, and I'm sitting there in a room where people are talking about traffic tickets. It was horrible. And so we try in those situations, we try and help people, guide them through the system and provide safety and protection. We will go to their homes and secure their homes, you know, put up cameras at no cost to them and do everything we can, whether that's escort them to their court hearings, to the family court hearings, give them resources. We partner with different organizations. Volunteers of America has been amazing. Many of the shelters, Providence House, Camden, their shelters throughout North Jersey, and even now the New Jersey Coalition to End Domestic Violence. We work with all of them to provide resources so that people can get out of those situations and have safety. And I remember when we were in Camden, one of the first homes I was helping with securing, this woman was there with her kids, and her kids were adorable. They were just running around. They were so happy and everything. And, you know, we're putting alarms in the windows, and the young boy's asking me what I'm doing. I'm explaining it to him. And you can just see this sense of relief. And at the end, when we, you know, when we, right before we left, she was saying, like, you know, I'm just so happy. Like, I feel like he, when he knew that, you know, we were going to get this home protected about her son, she was like, I could tell he was happy. And I just hope this means that he's not going to hide and sleep in the closet anymore. And, you know, that means something. You know, that little service gives that person that extra incentive. You know, we do food pantries and everything, but it gives that extra incentive to feel like they can start their lives over again. Our CEO, Nick Luciano, what this organization that he created and what he's done is truly amazing and life-saving. So in coming out with my story and beginning to do this advocacy, I've been able to discover so many organizations and foundations that are really helping. And I think the thing is bringing awareness. Some people don't realize that places like Forever Your Overwatch Foundation exist. You there?
Oh, yeah. You there? I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You mentioned something about the experience and how unsettling it was because of being in municipal court. For our audience, maybe that are not familiar with the process, maybe someone who maybe isn't familiar with the inner workings of the court system would say, wait a minute, doesn't this sound like this would be more a Superior Court matter, or this would be in family court? Again, at that specific level, why was it a municipal matter? Is there any clarity you can tell our audience today? Because maybe, you know, they're hearing your story, maybe hearing others, and maybe are a little confused as to, wait a minute, this doesn't sound like a more Superior Court type issue to be resolved in instead of a municipal court?
Well, because the reality is, as violent as the act was, you know, I mean, my abuser almost ran me over with a car. Okay, it was a very violent act. Nothing broke, and so it was considered simple assault. They debated, because there was a car involved, they debated doing aggravated assault, but it was a simple assault, and simple assault goes to municipal court, and that's the legal process, and that's something we're trying to change, because when it should be red flagged when it's domestic violence. And how my situation was handled wasn't necessarily the correct way for it to have been handled. So, and with the symposium, if people look it up with New Milford, and thank you to Councilman Matt Seymour, who put this together. He put together an amazing list of panelists that also deal with the municipal court, the family side, everything, to really, you know, bring awareness to how the process is right now. And we have legislators, Assemblywoman Lisa Swain is going to be on this panel. And it's really an opportunity for them to understand as well what's happening and what changes need to be made. That's one of the things I'm trying to change. I do not believe my situation should have been in a municipal traffic court. But that's the way it is right now, and that's what needs to change.
Well, and speaking of what needs to change, certainly a large part of what you're referring to is the upcoming symposium this Wednesday. And it's one that, without question, is going to continue to garner a lot of attention between now and obviously this Wednesday. Mm-hmm. How long of a process was it to get this symposium up and running? Because it seems that you're looking at a very distinguished panel of guests, which include yourself, along with members of law enforcement, other attorneys, again, the Senate Majority Leader, State Senator Loretta Weinberg, other assembly women and men on here. How long was this project in the works for?
Well, this is the second symposium. They did one last year. And I can tell you the councilman begins planning this very early, months out, you know, because I get that call. I got that call to be a panelist some time ago and to give suggestions in terms of what topics need to be discussed and everything. He really makes it he puts a lot of thought into this process to ensure that it is well-rounded and that it's going to give the information needed, not for those that are just experiencing, but maybe those that have family members that want to help, and even some people that are working in that space that want to create more resources to help those that are experiencing intimate partner violence. So It's really great what he does. I think it's amazing that he has such a well-rounded panel, specifically law enforcement. Right now with the COVID-19 pandemic, there's been a lot of question as to whether or not there's been a rise in domestic violence cases. So far, most of the studies say yes, but it's clearly underreported. There are a lot of people that were during this time, because you had courts online and everything, not sure that police officers were going to respond. There were concerns as to how this would be handled. People are afraid to even reach out to law enforcement because they are quarantined with their abuser. And so even then, if there are children involved, usually schools are one of the first lines of awareness teachers when it comes to if there's an abusive situation in the home. And so with kids not being in school, that's been an issue. And so it's really important to have law enforcement out there to let them know, especially now with the with a lot of the protests regarding law enforcement and race relations. It's really important for people to be aware that they are, especially New Jersey, they're very well trained, that they care about these issues and that they are going to respond. We had a Facebook Live with Forever Your Overwatch Foundation with law enforcement from Mount Laurel. One of them, funny story, was the sergeant that ordered my arrest. Corey Jones, and he's an amazing person. He does kind of what we do when it comes to help providing protection and safety, and he was their domestic violence liaison within his police department when he was there. He's currently retired, but he has also been a wonderful partner for our organization in helping us in being better trained and providing resources and supporting getting people out of violent situations. But they talked about the training, what law enforcement is doing, and also if somebody has a bad experience with law enforcement in trying to reach out regarding domestic violence, what's the process?
Well, I'll say this much. It is a tremendously complicated issue that you're shedding light on, Maria, for quite some time. Because, and you just mentioned an amazing component as well, that because here in 2020, even with COVID, it has made the problem that much harder to tackle. It's made it that much more difficult to grasp. And, again, for a lot of us, from March until the present, many of us have been home, have wanted to stay home. And the idea of, we can just be home. And, if we're family, we're fine. If we're just home eating, we're fine. But, you just nailed it perfectly. The idea that social problems like domestic violence could really be amplified because of COVID. Because as you mentioned before, the inability of someone to leave their home, their inability to go somewhere else because of having to be quarantined, that has to have been, I haven't seen any numbers per se, but you have to believe at some point that's going to come out, and those stats are going to come out, and those stats are going to be even scarier than we once thought.
Yeah. I know that law enforcement has specifically said that they've seen an increase in calls. Our foundation has seen an increase in the need for protection. And so I can only speak anecdotally. I've seen the studies. I can't quote them off the top of my head, but anecdotally speaking, we have seen that increase. And now we've seen an increase with people wanting our services because of this recent prisoner, a lot of the prisoner release legislation due to COVID.
And
some of these people go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. No, I just want to say real quick. This is what makes it really complicated, because it's like, how are we ever going to get a really good sense and a pulse on how serious the problem continues to become? Because now, again, it's being exacerbated by COVID. I'm sorry. I just want to get things. I'm sorry.
No, it's true. It is true. And again, because of underreporting, we can't say that the numbers are entirely accurate, but I haven't seen one organization that hasn't seen an increase. And then it was also difficult too, because due to COVID, getting into a shelter was difficult. They were trying to put people in motels. Well, now you're competing with homeless shelters and organizations. It was a complete competition for resources. Now that's starting to smooth out, but we're still seeing those increase in calls.
And one thing for sure is the ability of not just organizations that you participate in and partner with, Maria, but others around the state that feel that oftentimes they're, you know, their hands are tied or they're handcuffed by the process, by the system.
Yes.
And that there needs to be, whether it's legislatively that it needs to happen or through advocacy work as well, maybe a reexamination of domestic violence laws in New Jersey, where, for example, as you just alluded to, in your case, where it was extremely serious, the idea that, well, because, you know, you didn't suffer any fractures or any permanent injuries, oh, well, it's just a simple assault. No, I mean, that's a crazy scenario that if someone is using a vehicle to inflict harm on someone, it should be the most severe felony possible, and it shouldn't be downgraded or it shouldn't be sort of, you know, I think minimized, and I think that's a real problem that exists, correct?
It absolutely is. I mean, when you see it constantly minimized, people are afraid to come forward. What's the incentive in coming forward? And if they come forward, they're afraid for their own safety and protection, or they're in a financially abusive situation. So what resources are there besides staying in a shelter? So there, you know, when people ask why they don't leave, you know, why do they stay? There are so many barriers to leaving that people, not just that mental, emotional barrier, but there are very real actual barriers when it comes to your security, your safety, you know, just independence, financial independence, resources that make it difficult to leave those abusive situations. So now, it's a very real situation. And from a policy perspective, you know, yes, we really are working. And I've had the opportunity to sit down with amazing organizations, like I said before, Volunteers of America in Delaware Valley. They're doing really, really great things. And, you know, we've had discussions of what we think needs to happen from a policy perspective, you know, our foundation as well. And we've written up a lot of what we would consider, you know, what we think needs to be legislative action. But there's also things that don't necessarily require law changes. It's just rulemaking changes or just enforcing what's there or providing better resources for training. There are just so many there in learning more about this issue. I'm even learning about all of the things that that can change, even department changes. Some things fall in certain departments in the state of New Jersey and some fall in other departments. Streamlining that creates more of an efficiency. So making little changes there, departmental changes on who does what, could really save time, money, and free up resources for different organizations to do more.
Now, Maria, you've been an advocate for some time now, and again, in raising the awareness about the seriousness of this problem. Have you had any direct contact or conversations in recent months, I mean, even despite maybe pre-COVID, with Governor Murphy's office or even going back to the previous administration? What's been the response, if any, about your advocacy or the organizations you partner with in really making this front and center, like, hey, Trenton, this needs to be addressed. Like, hey, everybody in the legislature, we need to sit down and look at this. Listen, of course, the symposium coming up on Wednesday is monumentally important, so I do not want to minimize it in the least. But I think we can both agree, Maria, like more needs to be done. And I think more needs to be done in Trenton, in the legislature, and also via the governor's office, regardless of who's been in the governor's office, whether it's Phil Murphy or Chris Christie. What's been your experience in recent years in reaching out to like the highest government officials?
So, you know, when I first came out about my story, the governor's wife, the first lady, Tammy Murphy, did reach out to thank me for sharing my story. And I think that was probably the most conversation I had when it comes to that executive side. For the most part, though, I've just been working individually with different legislators. And there have been many that have been really, really helpful and receptive on both sides of the aisle. You know, when I was still in office, Assemblyman Eric Peterson created a bill, you know, it was elevating the consequences for strangulation. And it was a bipartisan piece of legislation. And so it was really great that he introduced that. And little things like that help. I think we all do really need to get together and revisit Because, you know, they did sweeping legislation forever ago, you know, and it was a couple bills as part of a package that are helpful. And I'm not saying New Jersey does everything wrong. There's a lot of things they do great, but it does need to be revisited because, again, there are a lot of loopholes. And so we have been trying to meet with different legislators, build that consensus. A lot of things did get put on the table, like just, you know, benched due to COVID. And so we're trying to now push that again. And get some traction rolling on a lot of the legislative proposals and ideas that we have to make change in New Jersey.
And again, your advocacy work is, I mean, at a superstar level, Maria, because of what the amount of time and effort you put into it, and it's personal for you. At the end of the day, this is personal for you. This is not something that this is not just some cause you decide to engage in and say, well, you know what, it is important, but I want to do my part. I mean, this is life and death for you. This is as personal as it gets. And for our audience listening today, and for those who obviously listen to the replays as well, what's the best advice in the time since you've experienced your unfortunate situation? What's the best piece of advice or layers of advice that you can give to victims of domestic violence?
Don't be afraid to get help. I've been there. I know it's hard. I know it's scary to come out with your story. There's a very real fear, but there are people out there that are going to help you. There's security, there's protection, and, you know, look at Forever Your Overwatch. If that's just your first hit, you know, contact them. Law enforcement, you know, people talk about law enforcement from a negative light. There are more than you believe that are going to be there to help you. There are resources. There is safety. And it's not your fault. That's what I would tell them. None of this is your fault. Don't be ashamed to get help because it really is life or death. I would just tell them to get help. And there are resources out there. And we're doing everything we can to help them.
And you know what? Again, you serve as a tremendous example, Maria, to everyone listening today and to victims that maybe are still not there yet where they need to be, to go seek help, to go break, you know, that chain of violence that perhaps they've grown in, that they've grown up in and have just continued that awful cycle themselves, you know, and it's really, it's sad. It's demoralizing to see that this problem still exists in 2020. You brought up something before about a cultural component, and I really want to ask you this because, you know, I'm the last person to ever racialize anything. I'm the last person to ever – I'm always denouncing identity politics on this program and my other media platforms, so I don't ever like to, you know, use race as a crutch here. But are there some cultural components – I mean, we're both Hispanic, you know, we're both Latinos, Latinas. Are there some cultural components that maybe get overlooked when it comes to domestic violence? Again, I don't want to paint with a broad brush or just say, well, one ethnic community is more prevalent than the other. That's nonsense. We all know that's not true. It can happen anywhere at any time to anyone. But are there some cultural components that maybe go overlooked here?
You know, I think when I speak about that, I think it's just our, as a society, how we look at relationships in general, you know, it's really, it's just, you know, I think that, yeah, it's not that when I talk about that, it's not that I'm talking about it from an ethnic point of view. It's really from a societal point of view, just how we view relationships culturally, how we view heterosexual relationships, not even looking to the fact that, you know, when I talk about there's been an increase in abuse against men as well, looking at the LGBTQ community, there's abuse there where people are afraid to come forward because some people are still, you know, maybe they're not out to their families. And so they're ashamed to come forward that they're in an abusive situation. In that abuse, some of this abuse is sexual assault. It's not just physical violence. It's sexual assault within a relationship. It's domestic violence. It comes in many different forms. And it's how we view and how we look at relationships, what's healthy and what's not healthy. There are things that, you know, we would shrug off. Oh, he hit you because he likes you. You know, that's a wrong message to send. And it seems very simple and silly, but it does, after being told many times, you know, growing up, you know, it does become ingrained. And I think it's really just having this this real conversation of what's a healthy, normal relationship. What is masculinity? You know, and I don't want to get into the buzzwords of toxic masculinity and everything, because unfortunately, a lot of descriptor, a lot of those words, you know, the definition, you know, according to whoever's saying it, has changed, and people have their own views. But, you know, addressing what masculinity is, you know, addressing child abuse, you know, when we think of a person that's being abused, that's the abuser, you know, I think that we need to start to have a real conversation of why they're abusing. You know, some of these people have experienced abuse, and they're perpetuating a cycle of violence. So having that conversation of breaking the cycle of violence, how do we do that?
You know what? And that's really important. And I'm glad you brought that up about breaking that cycle of violence, because in many instances, violence can be learned, Maria. I mean, I think we've seen a lot of journals. I think we've seen a lot of research from clinicians over time that strongly suggests the fact that, you know, when you engage in violence, it's because you've learned it somewhere. You've either been exposed to it at a young age, you've absorbed it, and now you're transposing it in your later years. And I'm glad you brought up the aspect of, you know, sort of clarifying about culture, and I'm glad you did that. But let me add this to it, though. When I reference culture, for example, let's say, let me just modify my example then. Is there a culture, whether it's a – not political culture – is there a social or just a pop cultural component here where it's been either social media, the internet, movies, television, again, elements of pop culture that have sort of almost enhanced this view about violence? Again, I don't want to sound like my grandparents are like, oh my God, you shouldn't play violent video games because this is what's wrong with society. I don't want to go that route. But is there something to be said about those elements and images of violence? I mean, listen, I'm not sure exactly what age demographics you and I are in, but I mean, I'm in my 40s. I remember growing up watching tons of slasher movies. I love October because it's, you know, horror movies galore. But, you know, I played violent video games. You know, I love watching pro wrestling, still have, always will. You know, again, these are just things that maybe have been embedded in our subconscious as a society for as long as we can remember. Is there something to be said about the impact that pop culture maybe has had in sort of glorifying violence to some extent?
I'm sure there's a lot to be said. I'm not a psychologist, so I don't want to speak outside of my scope. I do think it is problematic in media when I do think of it, where how abuse is depicted. You know, sometimes in media, domestic violence is minimized. Somebody getting hit, you know, is minimized, or there is you know, you'll see where the abused is faking it. You know, I've seen recently in shows and movies, or even just from way back when, where it's, oh, well, they only did this to, you know, put this person in a bad situation. And the reality is, when people look at the numbers and the statistics, while that does happen, while there is false reporting and it is shameful and awful, it, you know, it's a very, very small percentage, almost pretty much insignificant compared to those that are really being abused and coming forward, and how their cases are being treated. So I think sometimes, you know, people are afraid to come forward too, because they're afraid they won't be believed. And so, you know, possibly those kinds of portrayals are problematic, but again, you know, it's not something that I've delved into as much as just trying to create resources in the now. But it is something that I think is worthy of discussion, because maybe there is something there that we need to look at and address.
Well, speaking about looking at and addressing, this is something that I've been an advocate for as well, not just only on this program, Maria, but I think overall going back to last year. And it's something that I'll never forget this moment. I was at the NJTV studios, and I remember I was on Reporters Roundtable with Michael Aaron, and it was right around the time that they were airing the live testimony and the Katie Britton situation. If you remember that last year, I hope you remember that scenario. Remember the the Katie Brennan, not trial, but the hearings that they're doing in Trenton. Okay. And I'll never forget the awkward hush that came over the studio, because I remember as I was on the panel, Michael Aaron asked a question, because we were talking, you know, they were still discussing the impact of the Brett Kavanaugh hearings and everything else. And it seemed like, well, you know, here in New Jersey, there were many people that were up in arms about, you know, Brett Kavanaugh, women's groups, you know, mostly liberal-leaning groups were up in arms, having tantrums and meltdowns about the whole Brett Kavanaugh situation. But then when it came to Katie Brennan in New Jersey, like, if we all remember, there was a relative hush here in New Jersey. And it seemed like, yes, while the hearings were impactful and they raised awareness, it seemed like there was this element, there was this smell in Trenton, Maria, that, I don't know, it wasn't like taken very seriously. It was being like almost poo-pooed, like, oh, okay, well, we'll have these hearings, but it's not really a serious matter. You're damn right it's a serious matter. And I was the first one to say on the set, like, hey, you know, is everybody in New Jersey, like, did they forget about what happened? Or like, you know, there was an outcry about what's going on with Brett Kavanaugh, which we all came to learn was, you know, untrue. But all of a sudden, Katie Brennan's story, which I think touched a nerve with a lot of people, was sort of getting minimized. I thought that was a bad job in Trenton, across all levels, to not give it its due. Do you remember that scenario?
I do remember it. And it just reminded me of something that I already know, that when it comes to sexual assault, abuse, violence, you know, against women, and just violence in general, because it does happen to everyone, it's something that's bipartisan. I think sometimes we like to associate that it happens, you know, more often, or one political party treats, you know, one group better than the other, or treats issues better than the other. The reality is, abuse in all forms is something that is, you know, it spreads across society. It is not partisan. It's not particular to a certain race, gender, or whatever. I mean, while abuse happens more often to women, by the numbers, it's something that happens to everyone. So yeah, it was a reminder that it's bipartisan, and I was very—I was upset with how it was handled.
I mean, so was I.
It just
I mean,
minimized.
So was I. I mean, number one, because I know Katie personally; she's a Hudson County girl, and I've known her from her time in Hudson County when she was here. And I remember during that scenario, and I recall when I made that correlation. I mean, there was like some grumblings in the studio, Maria. I mean, I could hear the, oh God, I can't believe he said that on the air, you know, type of look on their faces, and then the grumblings. But I was totally right. I was like, wait a minute. All we heard in New Jersey from Governor Murphy all the way down the line was, this is an outrage with a man possibly being, you know, confirmed to the Supreme Court with these allegations. And meanwhile, you know, here in New Jersey, Katie Brennan seemed to be like trying to get help everywhere she could. And it seemed like the story was not being buried per se, but it just seemed like the story wasn't being given its due diligence. And then I was like, oh, where's the outrage? You know, last fall, everyone I was up in arms in New Jersey, from Governor Murphy to everybody in the legislature. But now all of a sudden, Katie Brennan's story isn't serious, or Katie Brennan's story isn't one that should get the same amount of outrage. I thought that was a really bad job. And I thought the optics said a lot there, Maria.
Yeah, there was a lot of inconsistency there. You know, it's really unfortunate, extremely unfortunate. You know, the reality is, you know, oftentimes the abused people that are victims of assault, violence, they are minimized. But at the end of the day, the abuser, the accused, deserves due process as well. And there was a way for the Murphy administration to handle this properly from the beginning, and they didn't. And I can't imagine how she felt. I mean, in a way I can, but I have empathy, but it's not the exact same situation, and it's still horrible, and it was inconsistent. And I think that it just, if anything, hopefully we can learn on how to not be in future situations. I mean, it's really frustrating when these situations that impact everyone become politicized in the way that they do. This shouldn't be a partisan issue. This is a human issue, and we need to address it accordingly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know what? I think you hit it out of the ballpark with that one. Maria, real quick before I let you go, obviously you, not only are you an advocate, you're a former legislator, but you're a mom. And COVID-19 has been rough on parents all throughout New Jersey. What can you share with us today about just persevering through this pandemic and how difficult it's been for you, for example, with your kids?
So right now, my son is grown. So right now it's just my daughter. It's been difficult, honestly. You know, while I understand why they wanted to do remote schooling, it's been difficult in terms of job for me, being able to stay, keep clients, stay gainfully employed, so to speak. It's very difficult in scheduling, and it's difficult for my daughter. She's a social person. She loves her school. She loves her teachers. She thrives. And so it's been difficult for her to basically be stuck at home with me all the time. So thankfully, our school district started doing hybrid learning. So you're in school half the day, home half the time. And they're trying to increase it to being in school full time. It's important, as I stated before, you know, when it comes to abuse and situations like that, you know, teachers usually are first line people. They can recognize these signs. So it helps to have those kids in school for teachers to recognize it. But personally for me, it's been difficult. It's difficult for parents in general. Not everybody can work remotely. You know, some of the jobs that are out there that people have aren't remote work. So I understand the difficulty. It's frustrating and tough. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're all just trying to get through it together. If there's ways that we can be creative and can continue to support each other, you know, that's what we have to do. And that's, you know, that's what we're trying to do. I'm thankful that a lot of people, you know, online remotely have tried to do what they can to support others, support other parents. You know, I know that they're trying to bring back, or they have been, you know, having daycare facilities and everything. But, you know, it's difficult. And it's not just as a woman. I mean, there are single fathers and dads at home that are struggling with this as well. It's all parents.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
One big struggle.
It's been a big struggle for all of us. Maria, we know COVID-19 has wreaked havoc on the Garden State. We know that at least from a public opinion perception in early March, many New Jerseyans were applauding Governor Murphy as it pertains to the measures he took to try to flatten out the curve, to make sure that we can quarantine at home and not be outside, to make sure that we can reduce the spread of COVID-19 in New Jersey. And since the executive orders have been enacted in March, it's now October. It's pretty much November next week. And many New Jerseyans are now taking to social media. Many New Jerseyans outwardly and openly have come on not just this podcast, but my show on Monday nights, Real Talk with Fernando Uribe, via IZNJ, such as Ian Smith down in South Jersey at the Attilus Gym, and others. Some legislators have come on my programs, really being very critical of the governor. During the day, part of my job is grading people. What type of grade would you give the governor during this time period of the pandemic, or is it in phases?
You know, right? Is it in phases? Like the first marking period, second marking period,
exactly,
third,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not an educator, so I don't give out grades. I've done it before, but I would say in the beginning, you know, I think there was a lot of good things that he did. I think that he tried to take a necessary response, and the numbers show that it did help curb the spread. You know, there are people that pretend like COVID-19 is nothing. I mean, I had someone that I love dearly struggling in a hospital. Did they make it? Yes. I know some people that didn't. So I do consider it real. I don't consider it fake or fake news or anything like that. I know it's a very real virus that can be very harmful to people, you know, that are more susceptible. And so I think that initially there were some good things that he did. I think, though, it is fair to be critical as time goes on with the response. You know, it's a difficult job. You're weighing businesses that are struggling right now. You're weighing pandemic issues that people aren't necessarily talking about as much as they should, and specifically New Jersey, and what we've been talking about most of this program, which is domestic violence, abuse, you know, human trafficking even. These things are really going under the radar due to some of these quarantine, orders. And so, you know, what are the resources to support there? You know, I think that as time goes on, you know, the response has to change, and there are people that are probably better at criticizing what his response has been, but I think it is fair to criticize, because how do we know to improve? and to make the adjustment, the necessary adjustments and changes so that while we are trying to tackle this pandemic, we're not also crushing people's livelihoods. And that's a big one as well.
And that,
so
again,
I don't know. I mean, I think as time goes on, you know, maybe there were things he could have opened sooner. I think that there, you know, the restrictions could have been a little more consistent. There were some inconsistencies there. But, you know, for me, it's the biggest concern has been on the domestic violence front, you know,
sure.
providing those resources, people that were in that situation, even now with the vote by mail, the Center for Progress had a study years ago that predates this about how vote by mail suppresses the vote of those that are experiencing violence and intimate partner violence. So that's been a real concern for me as well, because, you know, that's an opportunity to not, you know, voting so important. It's, it is a necessity. So you should be able to vote in person, but, you know, for those people that are experiencing that, you know, they want people that are, that care about their issues and want to be able to vote for those people that are working for them. So, you know, it does concern me if that vote is being suppressed. So I think that, you know, I'm not going to say that he receives an A from me, you know?
Okay. I mean, fair enough. I do like the way you broke it down, like by marking period, because it's true. I mean, I almost felt like it is a semester or marking periods per se, where you have to sort of look at it in phases. Marie, before I let you go real quick, again, I applaud you for your advocacy and really how dedicated you are to this cause, because as we talked about, it's personal for you. This is life or death for you. And I know it's life and death for so many other New Jerseyans that are experiencing the same horrific conditions that you once experienced. But it's 2021, right around the corner. You were a former assemblywoman. You still have enormous political capital as a public figure in the state of New Jersey. Any thoughts about maybe seeking another round? Maybe you wanted to get back into the legislature, wanted to be a legislator. Has that crossed your mind at all since 2021 is around the corner?
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. You know, I have to say, you know, it's a wonderful opportunity to run for office, you know, to catch 22. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. When you are in office, you know, people are going to love you or hate you no matter what you do. But it's still a wonderful opportunity to help as many people as you can if you use it that way. And, you know, there's certain things that I was work that I did when I was in the legislature that I was proud of, you know, there's some things where I think, you know what, knowing what I know now, I probably would change my vote. I probably wouldn't have done that. You know, we all live and learn and we grow and we evolve. Right now, though, it hasn't been a thing for me just because I feel very passionate about very specific issues, and I don't need the title in order to continue to try and make change. I'm not saying I've ever closed that door. Who knows what will happen in the future, but it's not something that's been on my mind.
Okay, fair enough. And again, ladies and gentlemen, coming up this Wednesday, October the 28th, from 6:30 p.m. until 8:30 p.m. via Facebook live stream. Again, you can visit the borough of New Milford. It's at www.newmilfordborough.com for the second annual Domestic Violence Awareness Symposium, led by a distinguished panel of guests. Starting off again with Matt and Leadoff here, you know, we have the former Assemblywoman herself, my guest here today on Political Direct, Ms. Maria Rodriguez-Gregg, former legislator, and of course, a domestic violence survivor and advocate, as well as Senate Majority Leader, State Senator Loretta Weinberg, Lisa Swain, Assemblywoman out of the 38th Legislative District, as well as other dignitaries that will be participating on this panel via Facebook Live stream this Wednesday, the 28th of October. Folks, if you can log in online and participate and join and watch, I urge you to do so. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And certainly we need to keep raising awareness about this. It's an ongoing problem that is not going away, but needs to go away as soon as possible. Thankfully, with great people like Maria Rodriguez-Gregg, folks here who you've listened to on the podcast today, it's going to go a long way in making sure that we eradicate this problem once and for all. Maria, before I let you go, I'll give you the floor, young lady. What do you want to share with our audience, not just only in addition to the symposium, but really what's in the future for you?
Well, in the future for me, I don't know. All I'm going to say is that thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to bring awareness to this very real issue that I very much care about. And, you know, this symposium is just one of many that's going to happen in the coming year to bring awareness, because this is something that we don't want to just bring awareness once a month, you know, 1 month out of the year. So there's still more to be had. If you want to support making changes, you can always reach out to me. Contact Forever Your Overwatch Foundation if you want to make donations or to volunteer. We always could use the help, or even your local shelter. There are so many things that you can do to help. And just share information. Share this symposium because you never know. One of the people that watch it could save their life. So
you
thank you again so much.
No, well said. And Maria, listen, I know that it's been it's been a long project to get you here, and I'm glad I've been so persistent to have you on this program, because you're a wealth of information. I definitely want to share awareness to the cause and certainly be as supportive as I can. Hey, please tell everybody you know how much you love Politically Direct and Insider NJ, and we'll talk off the air. Definitely want to get you on my other program as soon as possible. Is that cool?
Absolutely, definitely. Thank you again for being an ally and so much of a big help in this arena as well.
All right, Maria, we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks again. Stay safe, and thanks for joining us here today on Politically Direct.
Thank you. Bye.
Have a good one. Folks, what a great, great episode here today with the former Assemblywoman, Maria Rodriguez Gregg, again, out of the 8th Legislative District, and also she's a domestic violence survivor and awareness advocate. And certainly, as I said before, we can't say enough about her work in recent years to just shed light on this problem. You know, domestic violence, folks, continues to be an overwhelming public scene for us. And coming up this Wednesday, once again, October the 28th from 6:30 p.m. until 8:30 p.m. via Facebook live stream, via the New Milford Borough. Certainly, we're going to have a great, great panel of guests at the second annual Domestic Violence Awareness Symposium. Panel of guests includes State Senator Loretta Weinberg. She's Senate Majority Leader out of the 37th Legislative District. Assemblywoman Lisa Swain out of the 38th Legislative District. Of course, members of the New Milford Police Department, as well as Lil Khorasan, the Executive Director of the Women's Rights Information Center. And, of course, today's guest here on the podcast, Maria Rodriguez Gregg, former New Jersey State Assemblywoman, the 8th Legislative District, of course, the domestic violence survivor and awareness advocate. So, folks, I can't say enough really about this episode and how happy I was to get her on here and to discuss these problems, because, it's something that's worth raising awareness about. And as I mentioned before, October, even though it's a big month for me because I always raise money for breast cancer awareness, equally important, folks, because it is also Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So, you know, I hope you enjoyed the program here. And if you have a topic or a suggestion for a upcoming guest, do me a favor, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Love to hear what you have to say about today's episode and all the other ones. And speaking of that, folks, remember, you can listen to this episode in its entirety and, of course, all the previous episodes of Politically Direct by going to the website, www.insidernj.com/podcasts, that's plural, podcasts, for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Folks, nobody does it better, again, than Insider NJ, and of course, Politically Direct right here with Fernando Uribe. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, folks, at Politically Direct NJ. Also, follow my own Instagram, at Professor Fernando Uribe. Also, hit me up on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen, at Professor F. Uribe. Don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook, and also share it on your walls. Tell your friends to do the same. So whether it's on your morning commute, getting your daily workout in, walking your dog, doing laundry, for my students doing homework, hey, tune in and you'll be happy that you did. And never forget, ladies and gentlemen, that it's real. It's here. It is the 2-time award-winning Politically Direct. Good night, Medford, New Jersey. Great people down in South Jersey. Appreciate you tuning in here on the podcast. Folks, I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.